Hi, my name's Courtney Doctor, and I'm the Director of Women's Initiatives at the Gospel Coalition. My friends and I lovingly refer to the women we see once a year at TGCW as our camp friends, because the time we enjoy together at a conference feels just like a week at camp. And I want to encourage you to invite your camp friends, the people you want to sit beside as you listen to great teaching, worship, stay up late chatting about theology and life, and just have fun. And if you don't have camp friends to bring, come and meet some new ones. The final price increase is on May 8th. This is your last chance to save on your registration. Sign up at tgcw24.org. I really hope to see you there. That's tgcw24.org.
September 17. 2 Samuel 13. 2 Corinthians 6. Ezekiel 20. Psalm 66 and 67. The threat to David's reign, predicted by the prophet Nathan, begins with a sordid side tale that nevertheless betrays exactly what is wrong with David's rule. 2 Samuel chapter 13. The multiplicity of royal wives meant that there were many half-brothers and half-sisters. This sets up the wretched rape of Tamar. The profiles of the people involved, with the exception of Tamar, betray what today we would label a dysfunctional family. Of course, only two of the brothers, Amnon and Absalom, are seen close up. But David's handling of them, or better, his utter failure to handle them, is of a piece with the way he had earlier failed to handle Joab. See the meditation on September 9. Amnon is lustful, immature, irresponsible, deceptive, and brutal. One of the most revealing statements about him is what is said immediately after he has raped Tamar. Then Amnon hated her with intense hatred. In fact, he hated her more than he had loved her. Verse 15. We are dealing with a spoiled child who has become an evil man. If at this point David had exercised the justice he should have displayed in his role as head of state, the history of the next few years would have been entirely different. He shares the sin of Eli. See 1 Samuel 3 and the August 13 meditation. He sees his sons doing evil and does nothing to restrain them. If he had required Amnon to face the full force of the law, not only would he have fired a shot across the bows of any other potentially wayward son, he would have proved he cared for what had happened to his daughter. And he would have drawn the horrible bitterness and vengefulness that Tamar's full brother Absalom now brings to a boil. At this point, Absalom is a tragic figure. He rightly holds Amnon accountable. Unable to find redress in the legal system that his own father has short-circuited, he opts for vengeance, then has to flee his father's wrath. Doubtless, he should not have slain Amnon, but up to this point, he is presented as a more attractive and principled character than the man he assassinates. Yet he knows that even David cannot ignore this particular murder. So he flees, leaving his father to look foolish and indecisive. Relationships between fathers and sons are rarely both rich and straightforward. But the pattern of David's life, juxtaposed with Eli's, but a few short chapters earlier, illustrates the kinds of disasters that befall families where the father, however loving, indulgent, godly, and heroic he may be, never holds his children to account, never disciplining them when they go astray. David's failure with Amnon and Absalom was not a first. It was the continuation of a moral and familial failure begun when the boys were in diapers.